Welcome to Cannabis House Call. This podcast is committed to educating the discerning public and will make the case for cannabis as medicine. Your hosts, Dr. Les Matthews and Dr. Hal Altman, are physicians with advanced degrees in medical cannabis. The Cannabis House Call is sponsored by Compassionate Certification Centers, or CCC. CCC is a physician-owned and leading medical marijuana certification center that helps patients receive legal access to medical marijuana in Pennsylvania. Having certified more than 100,000 patients across the state through its in-office and virtual telehealth appointments, CCC makes the process of getting a Pennsylvania medical marijuana card fast and easy. Learn more at cccregister.com.
Hello and welcome back to Cannabis House Call. My name is Dr. Les Matthews, and I am joined again in this episode with my colleague and friend, Dr. Hal Altman. We are both medical doctors with advanced degrees in cannabis science and therapeutics, and collaborate to produce this podcast every week so that we can educate the public in all things cannabis. We are honored today to be joined by Dr. Chad Johnson. Dr. Johnson is a renowned cannabis expert and also co-director of our alma mater's program in medical cannabis science and therapeutics at the University of Maryland School of Pharmacy. Chad, welcome, and I'm going to turn it over to Hal for a more formal introduction and to begin our conversation.
Thank you, Les, and welcome, Chad. Dr. Johnson's background is impressive. He did his undergraduate degree in chemistry at the University of Virginia. Got a master's in biochemistry and organic chemistry from Johns Hopkins University, and then went on to the University of Maryland School of Pharmacy, where he got his PhD and did his post-grad work. I'm sure he'll talk to us just a little bit about his interests, particularly as they apply to medical cannabis. So welcome, Chad. We look forward to covering a number of topics with you.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
So just to begin, part of what our mission is here is to try to get information to the public that allows them to be able to approach cannabis as a potential medicine. And there is quite a bit of controversy in the press and in the scientific circles concerning the applicability of cannabis as medicine. In your role at the University of Maryland, can you weigh in on that? Tell us whether you agree with those criticisms and whether or not you see potential for cannabis as medicine in the future.
Despite all the states legalizing recreational and now adult use, or several of them, cannabis still is a bit of a contentious topic here at the school, at the program. So, you know, just a quick plug, we do have the first ever advanced degree, first ever master's degree in medical cannabis science and therapeutics. And we have over 700 alumni. We're in our fifth cohort that just came in, a really diverse group, which we're proud of because we think that's what represents the cannabis industry. And at the school, we only focus on medical cannabis, not adult use. Now, a lot of what we teach in the program can also be applied to adult use, especially when it comes to learning about the different clinical uses of the plant and also the pharmacology and some of the science behind it. But me personally, I do believe that cannabis is medicine. However, I do believe that a lot more research needs to be done so we can properly educate patients on what cannabis is good for. I don't think it's an end-all be-all that can fix everything. I think Western medicine will always have its place, but I do think cannabis can be a useful add-on therapy or potentially a first-line therapy for some particular diseases. I'm a huge supporter of it. I'm glad to see a legislation is getting more progressive, and I hope we continue, and I hope the federal government gets behind this as they are considering rescheduling. So I hope the federal government gets behind this, and they seem to finally be acknowledging that cannabis is medicine, so I'm glad to see it.
And Chad, let me just weigh in and offer Hal and I both our congratulations on the success of the program. We certainly greatly enjoyed the experience of being in the first class, and we're both proud of you guys for what you've achieved and what you continue to do in that field. So thank you.
Appreciate you guys. Thanks.
So Chad, if we jump into the meat of this, one of the things that we want to talk about today is THC derivatives. And just for your welfare, as well as our listeners, We've spent quite a bit of time in prior podcasts talking about the endocannabinoid system and talking specifically about THC and CBD. But there are a number of THC derivatives out there right now, which seems to be causing some confusion with the public in terms of what they are, what they're used for, who's producing them, are they reliable, those sorts of things. So we were wondering if you can maybe weigh in on that from your standpoint.
Yeah, this has become, I think, even more contentious over the past probably 4 or 5 years. And that really started from the 2018 Farm Bill. That's where a lot of this originated, which no need to talk about the Farm Bill in detail because it's a long bill that didn't just touch cannabis. It touched pretty much, it's a far-reaching bill across most of agriculture. What was important for cannabis is that it designated the definition between cannabis and hemp. What the Farm Bill stated was that if cannabis sativa, if any part of that plant, including seeds, extracts, whatever it may be, part of that plant, as long as the Delta 9 THC concentration was not more than 0.3% by dry weight, then it was not a controlled substance. However, if it was above, then it was. It's cannabis. That goes into getting into Schedule 1, and that basically changes the whole game when you're dealing with that. When you're dealing with Schedule 1 substances with the DEA. But hemp, on the other hand, skirted around that. And what people found was that, well, if I can grow hemp and it meets that definition that it's less than 0.3% by weight, dry weight, I can take that primarily CBD-based hemp, I can give it to a chemist, and I can convert it to these isomers and derivatives of Delta 9 THC. So let me briefly tell your listeners what I mean by isomers and derivatives. It's a chemistry term. Isomers are simply something that has the same chemical formula, same molecular weight, it weighs the same based on its composition of atoms, but the chemical structure, the 3D orientation of that structure is just slightly different. And in the case of isomers of Delta 9 THC, it's a position of one carbon-carbon double bond. That's the only difference. Now, when we say the word derivative, we're talking about a different molecule altogether. We can clarify which ones are which. But the issue is that a lot of the hemp industry is making claims that these are natural products. And you can find some of these isomers, such as Delta 8, Delta 10, hexahydrocannabinol or HHC, you can find them in very, very minute concentrations in the plant. And when I say minute, less than 1% or even lower. So it would not be practical to harvest a plant and extract it just for that tiny bit. But their argument is that these are natural. But when people go to dispensaries or to these stores that have the bright neon flashing lights that says Delta 8 sold here, Delta 10 vapes. When you see a product that's 10, 20% of those particular isomers, with all due respect, that's not natural. It has been made and it has been placed into those products. So the big issue here, and I want to make clear to your listeners that follow your podcast, is I'm not against these. I'm not against people making these isomers and derivatives, but what I am against is if it's not done the right way and if things aren't properly tested, if the products aren't purified, patients and consumers alike need to know what they're taking. And that's my main issue with it. And we can talk more about that if you like.
That's consistent with what we've talked about in prior podcasts. There's a major difference between walking into the gas station and picking up a product as opposed to a reputable company that does quality assurance activities and so forth. So we're with you on that. Can we talk just a little bit about the three derivatives that you mentioned, Delta 8, Delta 10, and HHC?
Certainly. Delta 8 is probably the most common The others are coming around as well. But Delta 8 was sort of the first known, and I think is probably still the most well-known, as states have even come on board and have started to ban Delta 8 products respectively. Delta 8 has actually been known for a long time. We've known about it. It was first isolated in the mid 60s. So folks knew about Delta 8 for a long time. And we know that Delta 8 is produced in a very low amount in the cannabis plant. We don't know how, but we know that it is produced. Some particular plant strains have been found to have up to 1% of Delta 8 THC. But once again, Delta 8 really came about because of the Farm Bill, because you can give it to a chemist, do a pretty simple reaction. I could, you know, easily do it myself. And you can convert CBD into Delta 8 THC pretty reliably and in relatively good yield. That's the issue here. And in terms of the science behind it, the pharmacology, what does it do? It's basically a less potent version of Delta 9. So it's still targeting the same receptors. For those of your listeners that have listened to previous podcasts, they probably know about the cannabinoid 1 and cannabinoid 2 receptors, which are the main receptors in the ECS. So it has very similar activity to Delta 9 THC. The difference is, when I say potency, you would just need more of it to get the same effect, because it's a little bit less potent. Delta 10 is not that far off. So for your listeners, when we keep saying these Delta numbers, Delta 9 is just simply, it's a fancy notation that chemists did to tell ourselves where a double bond goes. Delta 8 and Delta 10, we're just moving a double bond around one of the rings. Delta 10 is very similar to Delta 8. It's also less potent. It can be synthesized. And for your listeners, the same thing goes. You would just need more of it to get the same effect. HHC is synthesized in a little bit of a different way. It requires a couple of different chemistry steps. HHC, you not only first have to make Delta 8 or Delta 10, but then you have to do a separate chemical reaction that typically exposes the product or the pre-product to metals, which is something dangerous for contamination. We're not meant to get into the chemistry, but it's made by two different chemical reactions, less potent, just like Delta 8 THC, but is still an agonist at CB1 and CB2. So it activates it. It has the ability to have intoxicating effects. And they all get into the brain just like Delta 9 THC does.
Chad, the question comes up in my mind, if you give an amount of hemp to a chemist and that chemist can make Delta 8 from it or Delta 10 from it, could they also make Delta 9 from it?
Absolutely. They can do that as well. So what's tricky about the reactions is that for the most part, they don't just produce one product. It's not important we get into the details, but when you're heating a precursor in acid in an acidic solution at high temperature, some interesting chemistry tends to happen. And you get quite a few byproducts, and you also get the product you're looking for, but it requires a pretty extensive purification. So for somebody to really say they've got a pure Delta 8 product, it would have had to undergo rigorous purification to get rid of all the extra things that are made along with it. And there's several articles out there that people can find where scientists have shown that there's several byproducts formed with each of these reactions, and they've identified a lot of those byproducts. Several they haven't. And the big issue with that is a company correctly purifying their products and their reactions before they incorporate it into, say, one of these vaporizers that they're advertising as primarily Delta 8 or Delta 10 or a mixture of Delta 9, Delta 8, and HHC. A lot of vapes nowadays are mixtures of a lot of these isomers. So the big issue comes for purification. What are patients actually ingesting orally or breathing in, putting under their tongue? That's where the problem comes in.
That then raises the question, are there regulatory boundaries in place for these producers to perform that purification process, or is it sort of the Wild West?
That's the problem also. It is right now the Wild West. There's no standard testing protocol for a lot of these hemp isomers. For THC and CBD products, there is. And if you go to a reputable dispensary, there is. but to these gas stations, these sort of hole in the wall places that may not be held to the highest standards, most of them you will see are selling a lot of these isomers because they aren't held to the same standards. And that's why I would encourage all of your listeners, regardless of why you consume cannabis, whether it be for just standard adult use or for medical use, please purchase your products from a reputable dispensary and one that provides you a certificate of analysis that's been done by a third-party testing lab that is unbiased, unconnected to the company, because you need to know what you're inhaling or what you're putting in your body, because it is a safety concern, especially for these isomers, that there may be other adulterants in there and you don't know.
So to be clear, there are versions of these isomers, Delta 8, Delta 10, that are subjected to these independent testing parameters and are available?
Absolutely. Yes. Several of the, at least the more well-known dispensaries, even for their products that contain isomers, they will still provide a COA and they will show you that it has been purified and has been sent to a third-party testing lab. But there are also those that are what I like to call the bad actors in the cannabis industry that don't follow those same stringent protocols. Perhaps they're in some of the gas stations, some of the less well-known places that aren't held to the same standards. And the reason why they're not is because, once again, as long as it's hemp, it's not held to the same standards as are the standard cannabis products that are considered cannabis. So it really is a gray area. And the 2024 Farm Bill is in the works. Congress is still doing markups. They're in their markup period now, adjusting language in certain parts. And I'm very curious to see how they come together to address this problem, because it really is a problem for the cannabis industry. If we're trying to legitimize it, this is one way that we need to fix it.
So for those of us who are lucky enough to be in states where medical cannabis is legal, you look at this question and it seems sort of silly. Why would you use products like this when you have access to others? But I have a very close friend who lives in a state where medical cannabis is not legal. He's been having some sleep issues and wanted to try something and reached out to me and asked me about Delta 8. I think until all 50 states and DC are legal when it comes to medical cannabis, we're going to continue to hear these kinds of questions. And Les, I really appreciate your clarity on this and helping our listeners understand.
Absolutely. Not a problem. It's an important question. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Chad. We greatly appreciate your insights.
Wonderful. Thank you both.
So that wraps up this episode of Cannabis House Call. We're going to welcome Dr. Johnson back for another episode shortly, where we plan to talk about some of the minor cannabinoids. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
All information, material, and content on this podcast is for general information and educational purposes only, and is not intended as a substitute for professional and/or medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment by a qualified physician or healthcare provider. No doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of this information and any materials linked to this podcast is at the user's own risk. Cannabis House Call does not offer personal health or medical advice. If you have a medical emergency, call your doctor or call 911 immediately.